we're producing roughly 380 million tons of plastic every year, and we're throwing away nearly the same amount. Okay, so that kind of indicates that much of our plastic is for single use only.
This is The Butterfly Effect, a podcast that shows the big impact a small action can do. Tali Orad is talking to those special people that make a difference with nature and trees.
Welcome everyone to The Butterfly Effect. My name is Tali Orad. I'm your host and your butterfly here. My special guest today is Mimi Wu. Mimi is an impact-driven entrepreneur with deep expertise in circularity and plastics waste management, particularly in the Global South. Her mission is to accelerate our global society towards a zero plastic waste future by reducing plastic production and consumption, building basic waste infrastructure for all communities, and scaling innovative solutions. Mimi founded one of the world's only post-consumer plastic bag recycling companies in a country, Myanmar, which consistently ranks in the top 20 hardest countries in the world to conduct business. Since returning to the US in 2021, she has been working with industry leaders, startups, and VCs to solve our climate and plastic pollution crisis, with a focus on infrastructure technology solutions. Welcome, Mimi, to The Butterfly Effect.
Hi, Tali. Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to be here.
I'm excited to have you here today as an expert on plastic waste management. And maybe before we dive in, can you tell me what it means?
Sure. Plastic waste management is basically once, you know, somebody like you and I get a plastic product, whether that's in packaging or something that we purchase, like, I don't know, a chair or something, when we're done using it, we throw it away, it becomes waste. And that's when we start to manage it. So we're talking about our own personal disposal from our house or from our businesses, and then the supply chain behind that that comes to collect it, sort it out, into different kinds of material types. Mm-hmm. Ideally, everything is recycled and then taken to recycling centers or potentially taken to the landfill. And that's mostly in, I have to say, in developed countries or industrialized countries. In industrializing countries, that garbage van sometimes doesn't even exist. And so the chain looks a little bit different. It might be disposing of it by burying it in the land, burning it on your grounds, like right in front of your lawn, or even tossing it into the river. And then, you know, at the end of the day, I think wherever you're living, we find waste management to be like some kind of magical wand that we just put the trash somewhere and it disappears.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. And yeah. And not necessarily plastic, right? Waste management is all sort of
everything.
Right? It's wood, it's plastic, it's metal, right? It's
exactly
household. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So you were saying ideally everything is recycled. Mm-hmm. Now I've read that only 10% of plastic generated globally is recycled.
Yeah.
You mentioned landfills. I noticed that 50% goes to landfills, and that's in plastic. Now, on the other hand, I know paper is 68%. So mm-hmm. How do you explain this gap?
Well, there are a lot of different factors. Recycling is such a complex kind of industry. It is a business. And I mean, at the core of it is that, for one, there isn't always strong waste management infrastructure in place, meaning there aren't enough garbage trucks, garbage men, there aren't enough sortation centers and recycling centers to manage all the waste. Also, sometimes the actual business of recycling is not super cost effective. So that's a consideration because, as I said, recycling is a for-profit business, right? Mm-hmm. And so we have to consider, how cost effective is it going through a factory? Is the product clean enough? Because I found that as a recycler myself, higher quality in means higher quality out, which means that the output, the end product that you're making, has a much larger market value as well. And so, and that's kind of the fourth piece. You know, a lot of these systems and market conditions don't always exist throughout our communities in both industrialized and industrializing nations. And that's why only 9% of plastic is recycled. But there are a lot of ways that we can improve these systems and create new market conditions to increase the amount of plastic recycled.
Can you share some of them?
Yeah. I mean, so I mentioned, you know, that there needs to be very strong waste management infrastructure. That's the mm-hmm. first thing. As I mentioned, like taking in industrializing context, how I said a lot of people just simply burn the garbage, you know. These are not news stories. Like, this is actual daily life. And I lived in Myanmar for 9 years. I lived in Uganda on the west side for about two years. So I've seen this all firsthand. It's humorous yet also horrendous, a story. But in Myanmar, we used to have these boat parties that we would throw. And for the very first one, it was actually our boyfriends who did it, but all the girlfriends pitched in, you know, and helped and went to help buy all the huge garbage cans and garbage bags to prepare for the event, got the lights, et cetera. And the day came, there was like, I don't know, 120 people on the boat. Everyone was super responsible to throw away their cups and, you know, their trash. And at the end of the night, they all left. We packed up all the lights, all the DJ equipment, all the tables, tied up all the trash bags, and the dock hands came on to help us take it all off. And so they did. They took it all off, except when it came to the garbage. I don't know if you can imagine what's going to happen, but they literally went and took the bags that were neatly tied up and pitched them over the railing into the flowing river. Yeah, it was like, it was horrendous. It was so swift. I was just left in shock, you know, and this is unfortunately not, you know, just an anomaly. Like, this happens.
Right.
This kind of behavior happens all the time. And part of it.
So they cleaned just so.
Yeah.
we're kind of like pausing here. So yeah. You collected all the garbage, you separated whatever it is, and then they just took those plastic bags and threw them back in the river.
Yeah.
Such a great job cleaning their boat, but now the river, oh my God.
Yeah, exactly. And like, you know, part of it is because that behavior is ingrained, but mostly because there's just not enough infrastructure there. That was in Yangon City, which is the commercial capital, but there's not enough infrastructure to actually place the garbage in a bin and have the trust that someone will come and pick it up on a regular basis, right? And so that's why a lot of, you know, Yangon City is about 7 million citizens. Only about 50% of the garbage is collected and sent to the landfill, which is not even it's an open pit dump site, which is not covered, not controlled for methane, not controlled for the leachate, which is this liquid. It's kind of like toxic liquid. When organics biodegrade, it mixes with all the other waste and then just creates this kind of toxic sludge. But yeah, only 50% of it is being collected. I mean, can you imagine for the rest of the people who don't have access, what are they doing? You know, throwing it into the rivers. Exactly. And this is not common, or this is not just in Myanmar. It's happening all across the world. About a third of the world does not have any kind of collection and final dump site. Two thirds of the world do not have formal waste collection. So yeah, it's a huge problem. And then even looking at industrialized nations like in the US or Europe, et cetera. In the US specifically, we don't have a nationalized recycling program. So every community has its own rules about what's allowed to be put into the recycling. And it creates a lot of confusion in a way, a lot of wish cycling. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of us have, you know, get plastic and hope that it's going to be taken care of. And unfortunately, that's why it's 9%. There are items like PET water bottles that number one, so on the bottom of the bottle or of the container, usually there's like a 1 through 7 in a triangle. And that just indicates something called a polymer, which is a type of plastic. And ideally, we would love to separate all the plastic types before it even hit the bin outside. You know, you want to do it at home, you want to wash it so it's very clean. But certain types like number ones are quite valuable in the supply chain. There's a lot of demand for it. And so that has a higher recycling rate and collection rate than, say, a plastic bag, which is what I was recycling in Myanmar, and then came to discover it's actually one of the hardest plastics to recycle in the world.
You mentioned living in Myanmar and starting a company in Myanmar. Mm-hmm. Seemed like a huge challenge. Why?
That's an understatement. I mean, here are just a few things that were stacked against me. First, I was a complete foreigner. I don't have any cultural ties. I have never done anything entrepreneurial or knew anything about plastics before I started. I didn't have engineering background. And like you said in the beginning, it was it is consistently ranked as one of the top 20 hardest countries in the world to conduct business. So there's a lot of challenge here, and not to mention plastic bags are one of the hardest to recycle. But, you know, I've always been so impact driven throughout my life. I've always wanted to, as idealistic as this may sound, like wanted to save the world. Mm-hmm. And then the environment as well. I've always been picking up, going to do beach cleanups every time I'm out in nature, wherever I am throughout the world, forest, you know, beach, et cetera. Whenever I see garbage, I do try to pick it up, you know, and that's something that all of us can do. We can, I mean, be responsible and not littering in the first place. But then if we do see something in nature, to take out, you know, whenever we can.
Plastic is everywhere, right? We have.
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
Right. In the US, in Europe, in every
everywhere.
So, right. Yeah. So why just jump into the, seems like the hardest place to do that? Do you have any connections? Yeah. Do you know it's the most, I don't know, mm-hmm. valuable place, most impactful place to do it? Why plastic and why plastic bags?
Yeah. Okay. So it all stems from a friend who had started a very similar kind of business in Uganda. And I got really inspired to take action because I used to work in international development, and I frankly became very disappointed with how U.S. foreign aid was being utilized, in terms of I didn't feel like it was achieving a lot of, you know, long-term sustainability, long-term economic development mm-hmm. in communities. And so I really wanted to harness the kind of for-profit sector, a business kind of platform, to address these huge global challenges in a way that's both, you know, has the underpinning of an impact-driven mission, but also is financially sustainable, which is what's missing in a lot of like the NGO world, I find. Mm-hmm. And so, as I said, I got inspired by a friend who had done a very similar business in Uganda. And he was actually looking, this was in 2013, he was looking at investments in Myanmar and called me up and was like, hey, I think your business can work here. Why don't you come check it out? And so I'd already planned a trip to Asia. So I was like, okay, let me come and add on Yangon and see what it's like. And literally the first day I got there, I mean, I didn't have a plan at all. I don't obviously speak Myanmar. I don't have any ties there. But I think it was just that like drive of, okay, I want this to work. It's so important to solve this plastics crisis. You know, let me just check it out. I'm like young, naive. Yeah. So that first night I actually saw a garbage truck and I was like, oh my gosh, okay, here's the first lead. And I went over and asked, where do you take the trash? You know, and we don't speak the same language. So there was mm-hmm. a lot of confusion and laughter and trying to do sign language. But luckily someone passing by, a couple, helped translate. And that just kicked off a three-day research trip that I'd done. Actually, I planned it for 10 days, but I just, anyway, it's a whole nother story. I didn't quite get the timing right. But during those 3 days, I met a lot of people who eventually would become customers. I met mm-hmm. with the government there who, you know, I eventually signed the first public-private partnership with them to manage the plastic bag waste. And honestly, I didn't know any better not to do plastic bags because my friend did it. So I thought, okay, well, if he can do it, I can do it too. Right. Not to know until I started that, oh my gosh, this is like the hardest thing ever, because what do you do with a plastic bag when you get it? Usually we'll put garbage in it, right? So it's like mm-hmm. so dirty. And once it's got, you know, food grease and all kinds of nasty things, to sort that out, wash it, and then make it into a new plastic bag, it just takes so much effort on the cleaning. I did what's called mechanical recycling. I think it's actually much better in hindsight to do chemical recycling, which is going through a slightly different process and breaking down the plastic into basic building blocks that are mm-hmm. more versatile than what you can do with mechanical recycling.
And can you do that with plastic bags as well?
Yes, you can. Okay. Yeah. Absolutely. And I think that's the thing. I mean, PET, the water bottles, that's better for mechanical recycling. You turn it right back into water bottle, or you turn it into clothes. People don't, just an FYI, like polyester is made from plastic. So a lot of our clothes are made from plastic. A lot of our carpeting is made from plastic. But that's quite valuable. So they don't want to turn it back into a building block. They'd rather leave it as it is.
So can we use all plastic and recycle with chemicals?
Yeah, ideally you can. I'm, you know, working with a company right now in Canada who does chemical recycling, and they had actually run a pilot on polystyrene, which is like probably even I don't know. It's on par definitely with plastic bags. It's not easily recycled at all. And they were kind of successful on that actually, but it'd be great to kind of scale it. I think that the hindrance with a lot of our recycling is, for one, that supply chain, just getting it from the household into a recycling facility. There are a lot of inefficiencies that currently exist. Part of it, policy, like I said, communities don't even have the same kind of acceptance. So it's confusing for people, but also keeping things very clean, very separated. But yeah, ultimately, also with the recycling side, once you get it into a facility, there's needs to be some scaling of that here. And there are tons of recyclers throughout the world, but it's, I think, really focusing on how can we drive like higher impact in what we're doing and in much larger scale.
So you talk about scale, and all I think about is we're actually drowning in plastic, right?
Yeah.
This is such a huge problem. There's plastic everywhere. There's microplastic, which we can talk about a little bit later.
Yeah.
It seems like you're showing supply and demand is not matching up.
You know, we're producing roughly 380 million tons of plastic every year, and we're throwing away nearly the same amount. Okay, so that kind of indicates that much of our plastic is for single use only. And it's an industry that's $600 billion, you know, large. It's expected to grow every single year, you know, so we're not slowing it down, unfortunately. And these are huge numbers. I can't even fathom what it really means. But like I said, with people just constantly throwing things into the rivers, I've been to places where you can't see the ground underneath, you know, or, you know, even at our old factory site, we were digging into the earth just to lay out some slabs, right? We're just kind of cleaning it up and slabs of concrete, I mean, and planting some grass. And we kept digging into the soil, and there were just so many plastic waste, like pieces that have just disintegrated. We dug like 2-3 feet down, and you could still go down. I think there would have been plastic there. So it's pretty frightening, the scale of what we're dealing with. We've been so trapped in a throwaway culture and a society that chases what's convenient and what's new. And like you said, we're burying ourselves in this stuff. You know, we're literally poisoning ourselves with the microplastics. It's getting into our bloodstreams. It's in a lot of the world's tap water and bottled water. So it's really inescapable. With the supply and demand, it really stems, as I said, from this quality issue. In much of the world, when we get a plastic container, we just throw it out as is. But there are some societies, like in Taiwan, where you need to clean out that container before you throw it away. So you like really have to wash it. And that already boosts the probability that that container will be recycled because it's clean. In the US, another thing that we do is we co-mingle, which means we put all of the plastic types, the 1 through 7s together, along with the metal, along with glass, you know. And so it makes it harder on the facilities when they receive it to sort it out into different types. And so if you can ease that, these facilities, by the way, are called material recovery facilities, or MRFs. It's where all your recyclables ideally go. Not all countries will have MRFs, but definitely in industrialized countries, they do. But yeah, this is where there are inefficiencies here as well, in like in a factory, an industrial setting, right? That wish cycling I talked about, a lot of our bins here do not accept plastic bags. And so when they get caught up in the machines, you literally have to stop all the machines, get maintenance down, you know, pull it out. You stop the entire process. And the thing with factories is, ideally, you want to be running 24/7. You do not want to stop at all, because anytime you stop, that means you're immediately impacting your profit margin, which is already slim. We as individuals can go ahead and clean it, sort it, really understand what's allowed in your bins, and don't put anything extra, right? Because we're seeing a lot of MRFs closing around here in the US, but around the world, just because they can't survive.
Okay, so we need to, if we go to kind of like sidebar, what the individual can do, right, is clean everything before you throw it in the bin.
Yes.
And second, you said 1 to 7. What is it? I know some of the numbers you cannot recycle. You said plastic bags, obviously not. Which are the numbers we can recycle, and do we throw the rest?
Yeah, that's a tricky question because so, you know, each number is a different polymer. Number one is PET. Number two is HDPE, except for number seven, which is a catch-all. It means other, and it's kind of a lazy way. I think we keep kind of creating polymers, and I would love governments, you know, international bodies to say, let's put a stop on this. We're no longer going to be allowed to make new polymers. But you know what? Like I said, in an ideal situation, in an ideal context, we can recycle basically everything. The thing is that they need to be separated into their polymer type. You can't recycle like one, two, and three all together and hope that it creates a super plastic, because you can technically melt them all down, but the end product is not going to be usable. So I've said a few times that plastic bags are not really recyclable in certain contexts, where they're super hard to recycle. And the truth is that they can be recycled, 100% can be recycled. It's just that, as I come back to this again and again, usually plastic bags are used for garbage. It's so dirty. And the time it takes and the money it takes to get it to a high quality so that your customer will want to buy it and use it, that's mm-hmm. You know, it's low. It's really difficult to achieve that. And that's why a lot of recycling companies around the world do not touch post-consumer or used, dirty, discarded plastic bags. And it's why I was one of the only ones to do it in a mechanical setting. It just really comes back to this, what's the input quality level? And then what, on the output side, what is your customer willing to pay for it?
Right. So where is the company right now?
Well, my company is, I've just exited out of that, to be honest. Myanmar had a military coup in February 2021, and mm-hmm. that made the country just, I mean, it completely tore apart the social fabric, all the development that the country has been going through over the past 10 years. And so it made conducting any business, especially as a foreigner, really difficult. Right. Put a lot of strain on transportation across even state lines, and especially coming in from other countries. So it was really untenable for us, unfortunately.
Yeah, that's a shame. Were you able to do it here in the United States?
Definitely bringing this knowledge as I consult with other companies. So I'm advising, working with a chemical recycler, an advanced recycler. Up in Canada, I'm actually working on a project in Indonesia that's bringing village household waste collection back into those communities and setting up that MRF, that sortation mm-hmm. center that I spoke of before. So definitely applying the knowledge and working on a few different projects.
I want to go back to the microplastics.
Yes.
You mentioned it's in the water bottles, it's in the water mm-hmm. stream, it's everywhere, right?
Yeah.
It was found in bloodstreams, in organs, in places humans were not present. And you also mentioned the recyclable clothes from plastic. And one of the things that I recently read is that when you wash that recyclable fabric, mm-hmm. it releases more microplastics into. So I feel like we're stuck in this catch 22.
We as individuals can still revolutionize this, you know, the world. We can still take individual action and spur collective action together. Look at what Greta Thunberg has done in, you know, in Europe, just mm-hmm. as a student, you know, raising a youth awareness. And then now, I don't think there's any candidate in the EU who is running that doesn't have some kind of green platform, right? Because they're understanding it's such an important issue to constituents. Look at the youth in Montana who were able to pass a landmark case against their state, right? Mm-hmm. For promoting fossil fuels. So when we talk about, you know, our own individual action too, it comes down to individual choices that we make. That so much, unfortunately, of our clothes are made out of polyester. And it's that, you know, we can make individual choices when we do buy clothes. First of all, think about, do I need something new, or is my wardrobe actually okay? Can I maybe, if I want a refresher, can I do a clothing swap with friends? Can I go and buy something at the thrift store? Can I enroll in those? There are a lot of companies now doing where you can like borrow the clothes and then send it back. I know one of my friends, she's, you know, very climate and environmentally conscious, and she exclusively gets her clothes from companies where they just mail her things for the month and then she mails it back. She doesn't have any clothes of her own, really. And then when we do, yeah, and then when you do buy clothes, check the label. What is it made out of? Is it out of a man-made like synthetic product, or is it out of a natural product? And that's the same as when we go to the grocery store, right? It's really unfortunate that we live in a society, you know, that where most of the products we buy come in plastic packaging. But if you have the option to buy that same product in a glass container instead, or an aluminum container, I would say go for that. That's what I always try to do.
Okay, that's a good tip. Now, when I was preparing for this interview, I read this article somewhere that, and it was interesting because it came from, and I want to say air quote expert, but he was an expert, saying that it's better to throw away our plastic in the trash. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Then recycle it. Mm-hmm. Because it's right. The recycling centers are so poorly run, and their plastic end up in the ocean, as you mentioned, or in the river, or burnt. Right. So I'm just curious for your expert opinion.
Yeah. There's so much to respond to this. Let's focus on 9% of plastic is recycled. On the one side, oh my gosh, only 9% of recycled. On the other side, hey, at least 9% is recycled. And let's find a way that we can get to 10, you know, or 15 or 20 or, you know, et cetera. And it kind of goes back to what we were talking about, making sure that entire waste management supply chain is robust, efficient, you know, and that the end market is there for it. So that's something that we can do on the infrastructure side. But in terms of should we just throw it away? I mean, we should just throw it away because it's not going to get recycled. That's false. And especially in industrialized nations, once you send it into the trash without separating it to recycling, it is going straight to the landfill. Okay. There's no chance at all that it will be recycled. Whereas if you at least put it into your recycling bin responsibly, like making sure that your community can accept everything that you're putting in, there is a much greater chance that that is actually going to be recycled. There's the first answer there, right? Like, let's not just give up hope and just throw it into the garbage because there's very little chance that it's going to recycle. That's not true at all, especially if we employ some of the tips that I said, like washing it, you know, separating,
right,
et cetera.
Right.
But second of all, years ago, the media went on this flurry that the West sends its trash to poor countries. And this is a bit true, but I think there's a definition of when we say waste, you know, in the recycling industry, we actually talk about it as something valuable, as scrap. And the buyers that are, you know, receiving the quote unquote trash that's coming from the West, they're paying for the shipping. They're paying for the material because they want it. You know, it's a business. Nobody is just simply buying this stuff to landfill it in their own country and wasting a ton of money. You know, what's insane is that it's actually generally cheaper to import material into places like Myanmar because the product is, there's consistent volumes, there's much higher quality in the containers, and it's much more efficient in the US to collect material because they actually have the infrastructure to collect versus in Myanmar, the domestic collection is just not there. It doesn't exist. So we were having to collect ourselves and we're facing all kinds of inefficiencies there, right? We're taking from end of landfill or end of life, which is at the landfill. We're literally hand picking it out. So it's pretty crazy, but shipping it all the way from the US ends up being like there's a higher chance of it being recycled than the stuff that we're picking out of the garbage out of Myanmar. When I talk about how there is illegal dumping in these countries, it's just because that that infrastructure doesn't exist, right? So I don't think it's fair to compare when we say we should just throw it away anyway because it's not going to recycle. That's a very specific West context of having infrastructure already there.
We do not send any more garbage across?
We do, although I will say that we're not sending all our recyclables to other countries. You know, there's actually a really large recycling capacity in industrialized nations. Mm-hmm. especially for certain types, as I said, PET, for example. So I really just say don't throw it away. There's a really robust, you know, recycling capacity here, and it's growing too. There are a lot of recycling facilities coming online in the next 2 years, and they've been coming online over the past few years as well. We've actually consistently seen that the export of our waste has been decreasing steadily as it's being utilized more on shore.
What do you see the biggest challenge right now?
Oh gosh, there are many. I think, you know, what I feel most frustrated about is that we're seeing the writing on the wall with what plastic pollution is doing to the planet and how it's impacting climate change. We have all the technology available to actually solve this problem. And I think there's just so much talk and not enough action.
And what stops the action? What's the obstacle here?
Political will, investment. There's a lot of money in this world going into software technology, I would say, but also things that are just generally not moving humanity in a really impactful way. I think we're not investing in solutions that have significant impact. So, and you know, to be fair, the solutions that I'm presenting, I mean, just basic waste infrastructure, it's very costly. It has huge capex, it has huge opex. You have to have a lot of stakeholders to buy into it and to set it up. So I understand it's complex, yet it addresses the root problem of our plastic pollution crisis. I mean, one of them in terms of the management side. Whereas I've seen some solutions where they're connecting, you know, waste collectors with recycling centers through an app. And that just, you're adding like incremental impact. Mm-hmm. But that really already exists. What doesn't exist is the truck, the transportation between those two. That's what's missing. You know, the real physical infrastructure. And that's a real thesis of mine too, because we're dealing with such a physical problem, the waste. We need physical solutions to solve this.
Right, right.
Yeah.
One thing that keeps on popping into my head is the idea of we're paying taxes, right?
Mm-hmm.
At least in my town, I pay taxes. The tax goes to police, education, and part of it is for sanitation, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just curious. It seems like it's a very political solution, right? So every person that pays taxes should ask for the municipality, government, whatever, mm-hmm. I want to have that garbage collection. It doesn't have to be paid privately. I mean, I know some places you pay privately and some places, as you mentioned, doesn't exist.
Mm-hmm.
Just can't wrap my head around it. And I'm just curious for your thoughts on it.
Yeah, I don't know how a lot of the tax budgets are utilized and broken down. I mean, I don't know how much money is actually going in. I'd really have to investigate. But I have a solution for that. And it's been working in places like the EU and Canada. It's called extended producer responsibility. And it's a tax on plastic producers and on companies that are really dependent on plastic packaging. So we're thinking about Amazon, which is one of the largest contributors to greenhouse gas emissions, to climate change. Mm-hmm. We're talking about other company names that you probably wouldn't be familiar with, but are actually producing that e-commerce bag or actually producing those plastic cups, you know. Mm-hmm. So the government taxes these corporations and uses it to subsidize the waste collection and the recycling. And so in that way, it helps to expand the services that are available, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it actually also encourages companies that are paying the tax to think about redesigning their packaging and reducing.
Right.
Yeah. So that's pretty positive as well. And that's been successful in a lot of countries. Unfortunately, it's not all across the world. There is a group called the 3R Initiative, which is an alliance of organizations such as Vera, which they have kind of the gold standard on the carbon credit systems. They have developed a plastic credit system which we were among one of the first to pilot with them. And it's a way to have a global credit system because these EPRs, the extended producer responsibility tax, these are only within that country that, you know, where it exists. So right. Coca-Cola in Spain is having to pay and it's subsidizing recyclers in Spain. Yet Coca-Cola is a global brand, right? And so how can we extend this to places like Myanmar, Southeast Asia, where EPR does not exist, where it probably won't exist for a very long time, and yet, you know, 51% of our entire world's plastic production is happening in Asia for global consumption, right? So we all have a responsibility here. And then also Southeast Asia, you asked previously why Myanmar. I mean, part of it was the investment opportunity was available because the country was just opening up. But also Southeast Asia has the highest rate of leakage, of plastic leakage into our riverways, into our waterways, because that collection system is inefficient. And it's not siloed only to Southeast Asia, right? Because once it goes into the rivers, it flows out into the oceans, which we're globally connected by bodies of water. And we're fishing out of all these oceans as well and consuming. That's why we're having microplastics. We're ingesting it, right? So we're all interconnected and we're all complicit, really.
Are there any global regulations, any treaties?
That's actually starting. So there are a few. Well, there's one that has been developed. It's the Basel Convention. It was really, it's been signed by, I think, 180 countries to regulate the flow of plastic scrap. It's really been more tightly regulated in terms of what is considered scrap. As you know, China several years ago banned the import of scrap because they were sent, a lot of the containers contained, you know, I think the recyclers here, the balers here were starting to get lazy and started adding more contamination into the containers. On the recycling side, the people who are buying, they could still use it. I mean, I think they're pretty happy with it. They felt it was cheap enough. But on the government regulation side, it was became a bit of a nightmare for them to manage the 25 to 50%, you know, container waste into landfills that are probably already, you know, quite full. In addition to this Basel Convention, there is also the UN is currently developing what's called a Global Plastics Treaty. And so we, all the members are joining for those conversations and really trying to figure out how, what kind of policies, what kind of technologies as well should we be promoting to manage this problem. And I'm actually leading an alliance. It's called the Innovation Alliance for a Global Plastics Treaty. I'm secretariat for this alliance, and we're about close to 100 members of technologists and innovators who are operating on the ground, who intimately understand the plastics waste problem, who are actually creating scalable solutions for it as well. And we're trying to put our bring our voice to the table, which it's sorely lacking, actually. There are a lot of NGO voices. There are a lot of industry, including like oil and gas, big brands, whose voices are contributing to this global plastics treaty. But none of our voices, the people who are actually operating. And so we just aren't present at the table yet. And we're trying to get accreditation.
Love it. So what do you need to do that? What's missing?
To bring us to the table. That's a formal process. I think we are, you know, working with the UN to try to get formally recognized. But also, I think just for the first time, the innovators were kind of banding together because we're a pretty small group of, in terms of impact-driven entrepreneurs who are working on this problem. There, we all kind of know the same, you know, accelerators. We're all part of a lot of the same accelerators. We all know each other. Right. We know a lot of the same players in the region. But it's bringing us together as a collective voice, trying to raise more money for the industry. And also coming together as a united front to push policies, you know, even impacting, like I said, that recycling stream. Why don't we have in the U.S. a nationalized recycling stream? I just don't even understand it. So some of these things are just low-hanging fruit, you know, that are complex, admittedly, but they are really low-hanging fruit.
Yeah, yeah. Are you hopeful?
Yes, I am, mostly because there are so many individuals waking up to what a crisis we're in and are demanding action, you know, are demanding healthy environments. And we're seeing legislation respond in that way. We're seeing investments being flowed in. There just needs to be more. You know, that's what I'd really like to see. And I would love if we could really address this problem head on before it becomes too difficult to manage or too expensive to manage. But we're seeing a lot of brands responding. They're seeing their own consumers saying, hey, we need to cut out this plastic packaging. I'm seeing new technology being developed. It's been in the market for a few years, like dehydrating down household cleaner so that you completely eliminate like plastic jugs, same for laundry detergent into the sheets. You know, these kind of innovative solutions I think are really cool. Just rethinking, what does it mean to package? You know, how can we get more transportation efficiency?
What is the one myth in this industry that you may want to debunk or not?
Yeah, or not.
Yeah. Sometimes, you know, ignorance is a bliss. So like the guy that said, let's bury our plastic. So,
yeah. I mean, I think in a way we've already answered that, right? The myth that I really want to debunk is like, I think so many people ask, is my plastic being recycled? Can it be recycled? I mean, they think that it maybe it isn't. The fact is it can be recycled. Absolutely can be recycled. Your plastic is being recycled. And yes, as we said, only 9% of it is actually being recycled on a whole, although there are some aspect, you know, some products like PET water bottles that are being recycled on a much higher percentage level. And that we can make changes here. We can absolutely help to increase this rate, and so not to lose hope, you know, about that.
Yeah, I love that, not to lose hope. So what motivates you to continue the fight?
Oh, gosh. I mean, on the like on the dire side, it's just seeing like you talked about microplastics, that we've found it in our bloodstreams, embedded in our lungs, and we're not even sure what all the health repercussions are, but we know that it can be potentially very disruptive to our endocrine systems, you know, creating cancer. All of our tap water is polluted with water. And yet I look back, you know, decades ago when we had terrible air quality, right? The ozone had a hole through it. We were using these refrigerants, you know, the chemicals in the refrigerants. And yet when governments decided to take action, technologists were able to adopt and make changes to their products and technologies rapidly. So I think what keeps me going is that it's such a huge problem that we need to maintain focus on this because we only have one planet. You know, this is really the crisis of our entire lifetimes, and it's going to go beyond our lifetimes to our children's and our grandchildren, et cetera, if we can't get things right now. But I also have hope that there are many people around the world who are making a difference. And as I said, historically, we know that once people are dedicated to solving it, it can be done.
Yeah. Love it. So we talked a little bit about tips. Anything that we missed?
No matter how small the action you take as an individual, I think what's important is that you're showing, you know, your dedication, and that together with our collective action, anything is possible, right? Any change is possible, and we can progress together collectively.
Love it. So I always finish with this question, and I'm curious about yours. So what is your favorite tree?
I knew you're going to ask me this question. I have a few answers. I hope that's okay.
Plastic. It's nature. So I know. Go for as many as you want.
So with the recent project in Indonesia, I was able to also see the mangroves that are growing there. And Indonesia has, I think, the most mangroves out of any country on the planet. And I didn't know anything about mangroves really, but I've since learned that it's one of our biggest carbon sinks. You know, it's one of the greatest ways that we can suck carbon out of the environment. And they also, not only are they protecting us from carbon, but because they line a lot of the rivers, they're actually acting as a barrier from sending plastic waste directly into the ocean. The downside is that their roots are being completely covered in plastic, and it's really, you know, making it difficult for the plants to continue growing, the trees to continue growing. So it's something that, mm-hmm. you know, one of the projects that I'm kind of supporting, one of their projects actually is doing an empirical study of how plastic waste impacts mangrove growth and mm-hmm. also just trying to clean it up. So I just want to give a big shout out to the mangroves because they're doing so much for us. My other favorite trees, any fruiting tree, basically, because I love fruits, but I have a lot of personal memories with peach trees. My family used to go peach picking every single summer when I was young. And when my grandmother was living, she would have this umbrella that she would use to like pull down the branches. So that's like ingrained in my mind, as well as a fig tree. We love the fruit. First of all, my mom's like in love with the fruit, but we also, because we loved it so much, we planted a fig tree in one of our gardens. And when one of our most beloved cat, don't let the other cats know that, but our most beloved cat, when he passed away, we cremated him and then actually sprinkled his ashes underneath that fig tree. And for years afterwards, it like fruited prolifically, you know, so it just has a special meaning for me, both the peach tree and the fig tree. It's really connected to personal family memories.
Wow. Thank you for sharing that.
Yeah.
And thank you so much for educating us on plastics mm-hmm. and inspiring us and fighting for us. So please do not lose hope.
Thank you.
And thank you for being here.
Thank you so much. Yeah, thank you so much.
And thank you everyone for joining me today. We are all beautiful butterflies, each in his and her individual ways. I wanted to thank you for joining me today in this episode. I really appreciate you coming on this journey with me, and I hope you can join me next time. And remember, it only takes a small action to make a big difference. Be a butterfly.
And that's all for this episode. Thank you for joining us today. Please subscribe to hear more of our stories of change.